Yesterday, when I went up to coffee, I was walking behind two ladies in all of these shoes. Nobody hears you on the phone. And one of them said to the other one, "How do you like it?" And she said, "Well, it's a little disturbing, isn't it?" And the second one said, "Do you think it's necessary?" That bothers me a little bit. And I want to tell you what my principle is here. I'm not worried about disturbing people in the church. I think Christ disturbed, Peter disturbed, Paul, Luther, they all disturbed, even Erasmus a little bit. The question is, are we getting disturbed over ultimate issues, basic issues? Now, if I could somehow disturb you so that you go home and tell your pastor it's absolutely sinful to use the individual cup in communion and we've got to take it out, and if you don't, I'm going to quit your church, then I'd feel badly. That's being disturbed over a very trivial thing, the size of the cup. But if in these moments we get disturbed over something important, then I hope it was worthwhile, and then I don't worry. I think Tillich here says the most beautiful thing. Your job in the church is to make sure that when people stumble, they stumble over Jesus Christ. See? Now, if somebody leaves my church because I just insisted on wearing all these robes when they weren't used to it for the last 100 years, then I'm disturbing over a non-essential. But if somebody leaves the church because he says, "I don't give a hoop for Jesus Christ," then it's up to him. Christ had those two, and the apostles. Now, our job here is to make sure that we are really disturbed or involved in essential things. That's why Reinhold Niebuhr, I think so wisely, Reinhold Niebuhr, a wonderful man, called the church a cult of triviality. If anybody talks about trivial stuff, it's the church people, you know. Now, I think our job here, not just mine, yours too. This may mean some suffering in your parish if you want to get people involved in the basic issues. Always bothered me with a church council. You could spend an hour on how to paint the basement. And if you ask, now, how can we serve this community, nobody said anything, you see. Lay people are just as much at fault as we are. Now, I want to remind you, if this disturbs you, I really am not too sad. But if it disturbs you over a non-essential, then something's wrong. Now, as I prepared for this period, I'm not aware, this is my first time at Holden, and some of you are leaving, and you said we haven't started building up. I regret that, and I'm ready to meet with you somewhere else. But first, I think we have to see how sick the church is before we become deeply concerned. Now, we started building up a little bit last time, I think, in this criticism, not just of the Sunday School or Bethel series, that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm not against any series or for it. It's the basic issue that's involved. I think there are some theologians who look pretty deeply sometimes who are ready to throw out all books, all series, so to, all curricular material. Why? This is what we're here for. We can just say, well, they're crazy nuts. That doesn't answer anything, and it's not serving the church today. And for me, the church is the body of Christ. And when there are wounds on that body, if I love Christ, I'm going to try and help heal them. Now, as I prepared for this, yesterday we tried to stress the I-thou relationship. If you can get this in, I don't care now whether it's Sunday morning at 9 or Friday evening in your home, this is very basic. And if in your educational efforts this doesn't come through, my point is it isn't Christian. It may be a lot of education. You might have learned a lot about Old Testament history, but it wasn't Christian particularly if there wasn't this I-thou confrontation. Now, as I prepared for this morning, I recalled the most uncomfortable moment I had last winter in my class with seminary seniors. And I want to throw this out to you because I think this sort of crystallizes what we're talking about. These seniors have all been on internship. One of them was interned in Los Angeles near the Watts area. And in our class, he asked this question. He said, "Last year I was on internship in Los Angeles. My pastor sent me out to make calls on the unchurched." You know, that's always what they have to do, ring doorbells, the interns. "And I came to a home," he said, The man didn't have a shirt on. It was a hot day, but he was real pleasant. The intern said he asked me in, and he said, can I serve you anything from beer to Coke, whatever you want? And they had something to drink, and then the intern, you know, said, well, I'm here representing St. John's Lutheran Church. Fine, the pastor said, what do you want me to do? The man said, what do you want me to do? And the intern sort of cleared his throat, and he says, well, of course, I'd like to have you come to church Sunday. Oh, the man said, yeah, I don't blame you for asking that, but he said, let me ask you something. He said, for several years now, every Saturday afternoon, I pick up two boys in the Watts area. My wife and I take them up into the hills. I don't know enough about L.A., but he says, we take them skiing or something, swimming. We fill them up with chicken Saturday night. Sunday morning, we do some more in the mountains, hiking, and we fill them up with steak, and we bring them back home Sunday evening. Now, do you want me to drop that so that I can sit in your church Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and sing some hymns and listen to a preacher and go home at 11? What answer would you have given? Please. That poor intern had come to his pastor, and the pastor says, you aren't winning any members for us. We're paying you $250 a month, and then you know. Up in the hills? I don't know. I guess there must not have been. Let's assume. Huh? Bring him to church one Sunday, and the next Sunday take him up in the hill? Oh, I didn't hear what you said. Sorry. Oh, skip the hills at least one Sunday. Mm-hmm. How about a middle of the week church service? Now, there's already an indication the church might have to change. This is disturbing. But, man, we're in 67. Yes?
Did he have any clue as to whether this man was church in the sense of knowing the what was offered?
It didn't come...
Was it a clear-cut choice between, worship?
No. The man had been a church member at one time. That's right. Yeah, but he wasn't... He'd sort of gotten disgusted with the church a little bit, and he still was a good man, you know. So he and his wife agreed to do this, and he said those kids just loved it. Naturally, they would.
I'd get him involved during the week.
You'd get him involved during the week. Getting 10 other families to go up, huh? With them. This is part of your tension today. We've grown up, you know, and I have an awfully hard time, and my students correct me so much because they're much more ahead of me here. They're young people. How often I, too, tend towards, it's got to be in that church building on the corner somehow, you see. And just to quote Tillich, who, you know, is pretty good, who says, the church on the corner hides the church spiritual from view. Disturbing. I know it is, ladies, but I'm certainly not happy with what we got, are you? Going downhill? Yes.
Or maybe they're having cell meetings or something in the congregation. You might come.
friends and visitors and tell him what he's doing, and maybe this would catch on. If he could feel that he had something to give to that church, which he certainly did have, I think maybe he would, maybe not Sunday morning, but some other time, would come and talk to the people in his congregation, and maybe it would catch on.
Suppose he'd get 20 other couples to go out. What would happen to the budget at St. John's? If you got 40 people gone or 50 every Sunday and their envelopes don't come in. Pardon? There were two hands. Did you have up your hand, Mrs.? I thought you did. Please.
I think this is related to the problem of a couple who says, I don't have to go to church because I can worship out of the mountains. And this raises two questions. First of all, do you worship out of the mountains? And if you do you get anything out of it? So you might ask this fellow if he's worshiping, if this is a worship experience that is taking these children out of the mountains, does he and do the children get anything?
Seems to me you don't have to ask this man if he's following Christ. He's already told you what he does. He is demonstrating that he follows Christ. And I think it's almost ridiculous to say that this man has to go and be fed. He is doing what the rest of us who go to church and be fed should be doing.
God is love, and he that abides in love, abides in. He's certainly practicing love. I can't imagine that it's so pleasant to pick up these kids and delouse them. And, yeah. Good. Thank you.
I think I said before that when people know that I really feel very strong that there has to be some kind of faith. I'm not sure what kind of faith it is to come back and be fed. But the thing that concerns me in all of this, in all of our discussions about renewing the church, is it seems to me that the church should be the most creative group in our society. In seeking new forms and new opportunities, God has given us this power, and yet we're the group that most nearly wants to latch on to some form and lock it in and say, this is the way it's got to be. God, I don't hear all of where this guy was before, okay, so I can't really comprehend. Of course, we've got a grand need for the word and the sacraments for strengthening, but this doesn't mean they always have to come through the building at the corner of Fifth and Elm.
Thank you.
Yes, you had your hand up then.
Yes, please.
I like this packing in idea. In fact, I know some pastors who do this, to take children up the mountain. But it's not a substitute for church. And I think if you make it a substitute for church, then it will work better.
I'm not going to answer this for you now. But I think it sort of, as I said, points up the issue. There is so much in the Bible. I think someone has written, Peter Berger, in his Noise of the Solemn Assembly, there's more in the Bible against worship than there is for worship. Against the wrong kind of, you know, the prophets. I hate your feasts and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. People who just sit in church, go through the motions, you know, even if you hand in an envelope. And then to practice love, I certainly wouldn't want to do anything that would get this fellow away again from helping people in order to sit in church and sing a hymn. As Herb said on 6th and Elm, for 1,000 years, the church had no buildings, you see. It didn't go to a building like that. And maybe the time has come again, especially if you read the secular city where people are moving around and so on. You might have some portable churches, that's all right. But beyond that, why do we always have to go to a building somewhere? And, yes?
Well, I really, my emotions say a bit of a lot of things to do. Perhaps to get rid of our buildings, meet in a school, use this money to start doing something for other people. But I just know that the church congregation,
good question. I think I have an answer, Leah, but I want to hear the others first. I don't give too many answers, but please, Mrs.
I was going to say that I don't know how many our people are to do anything.
There is a hand. I should know your name. Yeah.
Is it your opinion that the only reason that people go to church is to sing a hymn?
No. No.
What is your opinion about church?
What is my opinion about church? Well, it should be the body of Christ. Well, I suppose people who follow Jesus Christ. That's what he said, follow me. I don't know what answer you would have. I don't know. This is my problem. You see, here are the extremes. Now, I'm really not here to argue. Arguing, there's nothing Christian about that. But if we're here to help each other, I think you're taking one to extreme or the other. To say he isn't a Christian, I don't know. Or to say, just because people walk up to an altar, get some bread and wine, they're not Christian. I don't know. This is our problem. And we all have it, yes.
There is a Catholic church that has started in Oklahoma City, I understand, that just people meeting in a home. Now, here is a very, very high church, and these people feel that they can come into this home and get the things that are essential for being good Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And but you can't But they do gather for the sacraments and this is the way they're starting, and I think probably that's our answer. When we start new church, maybe we could start new churches on this with this type of pattern. I don't think that we can tear down, do away with what we have, but maybe we can get some really vital groups started as small congregations without church. I think if we're going to start this type of thing, that's the way it will have to be done, not by getting rid of everything we have.
Please, Mrs. Smith.
And certain people just couldn't hold jobs if they said, no, I won't. I mean, this is becoming another factor in, I think, a lot of our community. So that we are going to have to find that these same things are provided, but in alternate ways.
Okay. I thought there was a hand. Please. Absolutely. I couldn't underscore that anymore. The renewal men like to say reflection and action. I like that. Worship has gotten to be sort of that mechanical approach. So you sit down. But the word reflection at this moment at least means more to me. There's always this dialectic, the reflection and the action, the reflection and the action. Now, we've been reflecting mostly and very little of this action. And I'm not going to tell this man, you give up your action now in order to reflect again. He had done that before and he became sorely disgusted. Now, if he goes the other extreme, then there's something wrong too. Yes, please.
Well, another thing to ask, what are you going to do? I don't know about the other two cities. I know that in the ALC we have really only one experiment in a different congregational structure in Washington, D.C. I think this is kind of tragic because I think there are people in many of those large churches who would be willing to try different forms of congregational structure. Not giving up the word and sacrament, but maybe not in a building. I think our American Missions Department. But they go out, and the first thing they do when they go on a mission field, they go out and build a building. And then they wonder why the people get so building conscious. Because the very first thing they do is, you can't have a church until you put up $100,000 worth of building. No wonder you rob the state of your in establishing an old school in that community.
I want to answer to that, little, please.
Yes, I think we need a center, and I think we're all. Overtones here that the church buildings as such are an evil almost, an overtone here. Now there's nothing wrong with church buildings. It's the people's attitude towards this particular building. And this is the conflict that I think the human is involved with all the time. It's almost a dualism type of thing that the thought of a rich man is evil practically. There's nothing wrong with riches per se. It's what the person's attitude is about it, what he does with these. It's the same the building. If you're building the building for the glory of the individual members of the congregation, and so that we've got the biggest church building in town, it's the most beautiful, this is wrong. But if this building is there to serve the members of the congregation and the community in Sunday school efforts and the renewal of people coming in every Sunday and maybe serving other community functions, there's certainly nothing wrong with that building.
Thank you. If the building becomes an ultimate again, you know, now we have done this. As I said last time, I guess you weren't here, but I really feel deeply on this. I can't take money out of my separated portion or whatever you call it for a church building, just to keep the rain off of my head. That's not for God's glory. No more than I can for a hat that I buy. This is serving me a building, so it's nice and warm, maybe even air-conditioned. There's nothing... Now, if we sense that, you see, but a lot of people give their money for a building, think they've done something to the glory of God. No, I've been serving myself here, just like I buy a pair of shoes so my feet don't hurt. And now, if we see this, then I think this will help. And this is what the renewal men are saying. And I happen to agree with the man in Chicago who has said, I don't see how the Christians in Chicago can put up one more cathedral while there are hundreds of people going home. Get it? Now, I could drive a mile farther. They could close my church, and I'd drive a mile farther in a nicely heated car. You know, wouldn't that be suffering? So that the money, our total budget, could be used for these people down in South Chicago. No, we got to have our own building, because drive a mile farther would be awful. I said this in a little group the other night. I'm ready to close 5 of the 6 Lutheran churches in my town. We could all go to one. Why? So we pay less? No, sir. So that 5 pastors and budgets would be saved to go to Africa where people have never heard about the gospel. But I'm so selfish, and a lot of others. No, I got to have one near me. Now, this is what Martin Marty is known for. And I love Martin Marty. I don't know whether you know much about the background, but the Missouri Synod pastor, who's now Divinity School, he harped on this so much until one of his friends called it Marty's Law. And if you read in a paper today or in a church paper about Marty's Law, this is what it is. This is what he harps on. He says the church is guilty, get this, of maximum convergence on areas of minimum need. Maximum convergence on areas of minimum need. What happens? Near us is a little town of 5,000 with a Christian college and 2 churches, and what happens? The church puts in another mission. Some of my shekels were used for that.
But aren't you talking to the wrong people when you talk to us here, when it's the hierarchy of the church that you turn to?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to come... Okay, I'm going to come to that in just a minute. I think we're getting down to earth here. You see, first of all, I think we ought to be aware of this. We've always thought to... I started another mission in my last parish. I'm not sure I'd do it again. We were a mile, I guess, from any other church. It wasn't too bad. And we kept the Presbyterians out by starting a mission. But you see, where we think this is a wonderful thing when somebody says we started another mission at the end of town. Maybe, maybe not. Now, what's the problem here? You asked this, what are we to do? That's what I'm concerned about in these lectures. And do you know how I got started in this whole renewal movement? I'm in education. And over and over and over, and I've got it black on white, I read, what's the answer? What's the solution? Is education. Now, you are disturbed a little bit. I think this is by the grace of God, maybe we're here. This is a gift. Now, you have to do this at home. How? By saying, let's close our church next Sunday. This takes patience. All this takes patience. But suppose that in your church, this is what I mentioned the first day, how many have studied Honest to God? The most popular book in the church's history. No, so we say we better decide how many journeys Paul had. That's running away from the problem. Now, my point is, I can, if a pastor writes in, especially former students, you know, they feel close to you, what do you use for adult materials nowadays? I usually tell them, why don't you read the weekly page in Time magazine? Study that. How the Christian's attitude towards the Jews. Last week it was on Pannenberg, a little tough. But these are the issues that people are talking about today. And then you go back and say, what does Philippians say about this? And you could study situational ethics. And you could study a good book, Martin Marty's. I like this. Church unity and church mission. Here is a Lutheran pastor who says, man, if we don't get together, we're sunk. Now, the Methodists said that. You say, well, no. You read church unity and church mission. The whole book is based on the theme of John 17, let them be one in order that the world might believe. Now, I happen to agree with the people in Kansas City where five congregations joined to build one church. Now, if this isn't a crime that cries to highest heaven, three churches on three corners, each one worth $500,000, we could use one building. You see, the building becomes so incidental then. Now, if you don't want to worship with them, then have your worship at 8 in the night or Monday evening. But you could save $500,000. And if 30 cents can keep a person alive in India for a day, think of what that would mean. But no, I've been in the ministry before I taught. It's much easier to get money for a stained glass window from Mary Meyer if you put beneath, given by Mary Meyer in honor of her mother. I can get that anytime. I'm not even boasting here. But to get money for deprived areas and so on, well, you never see the results. Isn't that what Jesus would be doing? And here, I think really, as long as some of you are leaving, you said do something more positive today. I really believe in my heart, deep and sincere, I wouldn't be here. I could be doing that. That's sickly. Now, don't overstress this and say I said the only no. But as I see it, the basic job for you and for me is to go home to our parishes and whatever people we serve, is and to get them disturbed about this thing. There's no learning without anxiety, you know. And until we get this, if we say, well, isn't it wonderful we build another church? And you say, yes, it is wonderful. How can you say that in front of Jesus Christ? You're responsible to him. And you might have to say as graciously, gently as you could, Jim, do you think we're really doing what we ought to be doing? What do you mean? Well, I was at Holden, and they said some different stuff. And maybe we could get together some evening and talk this over. Well, then you get Jim involved, and pretty soon John and his wife. And then you might even study the book, Who's Killing the Church, you see. And then this goes on. But if it isn't done, ladies and gentlemen, in my book, you may as well close the churches. I think then they're dead. And even to discuss a question as we began with, I think already, 20 years ago, I would have said, get the man to church. I don't anymore. Because I know what a horrible thing this is just to get a man to church and get him baptized. Now, if you say that's all, no, but that seems to have been the mistake that we have made. I don't know how many people I ask. You know, one of the toughest things, you help me here. Seminary is in a very strange position, you know. A lot of people criticize us for saying such new stuff. And then from the other angle, we're criticized. Why don't you wake up to our times? You see, we're in a very tough position. And do you know the question that I always dread in one of my classes, and it comes every year? The question that usually a senior, because he's been on internship, asks and says, all right now, what do you say when you ring a doorbell? And here, let's say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith come to the door. What do you say? I'm from St. John's Lutheran. Now what? Will you join the church? Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Well, maybe they don't know enough about Jesus Christ to believe in him. What would you ask? What do you say? Will you come to church Sunday morning? Well, they just might, for the next 20 years, come to church and sit there. Or they may say, Mister, I know a lot of people sit in church. They're just blooming hypocrites. And now, what do you say? You don't want the mechanical. Now, just come to church and be baptized, you know, and if you give so much a week. You don't want the other so that you give the impression, well, it really doesn't make any difference whether you worship or not. So what? The only answer that I see is a lot of education. You may say, well, if you're willing, let's sit down some evening and talk this over. And then from there, you might get into the fellowship. And a year later, they might be baptized if they see the real meaning of baptism, you see. But I don't want to get away from this. And before some of you go home, don't do it for me. Because you are responsible to God in 67. What happened in 1530, you're not responsible for. But we are responsible for this day. And I don't see how you can live in 67 without, as a church member, without reading a few of the things that 90% of the subject material is about. And if you read this, really, I've challenged pastors' groups with this in the master's program twice last year, and they had to come to the conclusion. They didn't want to. I asked them, what are these books stressing? They're very negative on preaching. We might get into this next week. I preach more than any man on our faculty. But they're saying, ladies and gentlemen, preaching in 67 is just an anachronism. It's like riding a horse and buggy. People are tired of preaching. Kids say, you know, don't preach to me, Dad. You know that? Now, it may be that for 50 years we'll have to give it up a little bit. And this isn't fun for me to say. But all I know is that preaching is probably not very effective today. That these men are saying, don't argue with me, they know much more than I. These men are saying right and left, from rural how on down or up, whatever you want. They are saying, you want me to prove this? Last year, Dr. Steinle talked to us. Steinle teaches preaching at Union Seminary in New York. You couldn't go much higher in that field. He told us and our students, he said, next year I'm on sabbatical, and do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend my whole sabbatical on the question, is there any room left for preaching today? The man who teaches it. If the New Testament scholar had said that, you'd say, well, he's just jealous of that. But the man who teaches preaching and happens to be a Lutheran. And what's he saying? He is saying that people just don't go for that kind of an approach today. Now, the Bible doesn't say anywhere you've got to communicate the gospel from a pulpit. There wasn't any pulpit in the early church. There was a teaching desk. Now, maybe we have to return to that. Rome, I think they're coming to some preaching because their people aren't so tired of it. Now, I don't know the answer, but I do know that preaching today is in the dumps. And we'll have to just find another way. Now, I can be stubborn and say, I'm going to preach, and if people don't come, all right, I'm true to God. That's just not honest. That's ignoring human beings. And I think, gentlemen, that one of the reasons why we had this problem yesterday, and I want to close with that a little bit. We've been right on the issue, I think. Why this whole negative approach to Sunday school and preaching and all this, the way of communicating the gospel. People, I don't think, are saying the gospel is wrong. But here, Tillich, you know, was so wonderful. He said, people just don't get what we're trying to say. Or Ruel Howe, these are top-notch men. I must give you one of Ruel Howe's favorite illustrations, which I think is wonderful. When he's riding on a plane and talks to the fellow next to him, pretty soon, you know, what do you do? And Ruel Howe says, I'm a clergyman. Oh. And then, you know, we clergymen know this. The other fellow invariably says, well, I belong to church too, you know. lest you start converting him. And so the other guy says, where? Well, I belong to St. John's Methodist in Cincinnati. Rural Howell will say that. That's that stone church down there by the courthouse. Yeah, you know it? Yeah. And then it comes a little awkward silence. And then Howell will say something like this. Where's your church this morning? That's the point. Where's your church this morning? I belong to Holy Trinity Lutheran on the... But I'm 3,000 miles from... Where's your church this morning? I think this is sort of the point. Instead of this emphasis always, somehow I got to go back there somewhere. Why, the church is the people of God. And in all this teaching now, some of these men are saying, you see, the reason... I'll commit myself. I agree with them. I think one of the reasons why very perceptive men are saying it's awfully hard to teach in Sunday school or Bethel series or any of this. Why? It's because it's such an artificial situation, you see. You dress up 10 kids, real nice, take them to a building that they won't see for all week, and then you talk about Jesus as though this were so artificial, you know. And so... You really don't talk about Jesus at home, you talk about him over there. And so the church is over there. That's why Bishop Pikin and Bishop Robinson have gotten so sharp on this. And they're saying it out of concern. Number two, I think these men are so sharp against this emphasis because our teaching, and I include myself, I'm not running anybody else down, our teaching consists largely of information. I brought this along from Tilly. The educational function of the church does not consist in information about the history and the doctrinal self-expressions of the church. Now, that's been 90% of my teaching, and maybe yours. A confirmation instruction which does merely that misses its purposes, although it may communicate useful knowledge. Neither does the educational function of the church consist in the awakening of a subjective piety, which may be called conversion, but which usually disappears with its emotional causation. A religious education which tries to do this is not in line with the educational function of the church. The church's task is, I'm going to read this very slowly because it's tough, is to introduce each new generation into the reality of the spiritual community. Now, we would say church. He never uses the word church. It's too dead. The spiritual community into its faith and into its love. You don't teach, you participate. This happens through participation in degrees of maturity, whether you're 5-year-old or 20. And it happens through interpretation in degrees of understanding. There is no understanding of a church's life without participation. But without understanding, the participation becomes mechanical and compulsory. This is something to think about as you drive home. I really, without participation, there is no learning. Now, in Sunday school, there's very little participation. There can't be because the situation is artificial, you see. Now, if we could get this back to where it belongs, then I think we could be of real help. I want to close with, for this morning at least, with a statement that has helped me and I think might help you. We've had some pretty fine lines here, ladies and gentlemen, when he asks now, is worship merely singing? No. Well, it's very fine line. Do you need information? You can't make a decision without information. All the lines are fine. The lines were pretty fine between the Pharisees and Christ's disciples. They all worshiped. They all talked about God. What was the difference? And here again, one of these theologians, it took me a long time to catch on, made the statement. He said, in church work, we ought never forget that the enemy of the best is the good. You chew on that next week, will you? This is what he means. When it came time for me to get ready for these lectures before I left home, what do you suppose the devil told me? Did he tell me, why don't you go down to East Dubuque and get drunk? No, he was fairly sure I wouldn't do that. What did he say to me? Why don't you run away with the neighbor's wife? No, at my age, he was pretty sure I wouldn't do it. What did he say to me? He said, Strang, why don't you clean up your desk? Now, that would be something very good. It would please my wife. He told me, now listen, it'd be good for your students when they come in to see a clean desk. You see. Now that would have been good, but not the best. My job was to get ready for this. I had promised to come here. Cleaning desks is good, but it's not basic. Now you look once of all the things that we do in church, they're good. Really, they're pretty good. They're not the best. And the devil doesn't tell you and me now, you know, get half a dozen women and go to Bahamas or something. He knows better. But he always tries to get us to do a good thing because he knows the enemy of the best is the good. I guess our time is up.